The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher, go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Women with Balls, where I, Katie Balls, speak to today's trailblazers. My guest today is the holder of two unique parliamentary honours. She is the Tories' youngest sitting MP and holds the striking title of the only Conservative Party gainer at this year's general election, one to remember for end-of-the-year political quizzes. Before going into politics, she was a semi-finalist in the 2017 Miss India UK Beauty Pageant, but in more recent Conservative leadership beauty contests, she backed James Cleverly and even opened his leadership launch. Declaring that small businesses are a backbone, she gave her maiden speech in Parliament just last week, and she has talked about the importance of her background as a first-generation British citizen. My guest today is Shivani Raja. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. The first member of the 2024 intake of any party to come on. And we tend to begin by saying, you know, how would you describe your childhood?
Oh, well, thank you for having me. And I had a happy childhood. And I almost feel guilty sometimes for saying that. But no, honestly, my parents worked incredibly hard. They migrated in the late 70s. And my dad did everything he could to really protect me and my siblings and kept us in a bit of a bubble. And I feel incredibly lucky and privileged for that. My dad, even to this day, despises the word bored. And so we were always kind of encouraged to be doing the most. So I've played every single sports when I was in school.
So what sports are we talking?
Oh, like from lacrosse to like gymnastics to trampolining, netball, rugby, football, cricket, rounders. I did everything. It's kind of jack of all trades, master of none with regards to sport. But, you know, we spent all the weekends like traveling the country. And even like now, now that me and my siblings have kind of moved out of home, I spoke to my dad on the way to London yesterday and I said, oh, what are you doing? And he says, Toffee, our pet, is bored, so I'm taking him for a drive.
So, so if at home you were, it was a quiet day, like I'm bored, Dad, who'd be like, no time for this.
Yeah. We were always out and doing something. And obviously, you know, growing up, you know, you're just having the most fun and it's the best time ever. But only now that I look back on it and I see how much it has did contribute to this open-mindedness that I have.
And your parents, I think I'm correct to say, came from Kenya and India.
Yeah.
So have you spoken to them much about their experiences growing up and how it's different to you?
It was incredibly tough for them. But well, both of my parents, really. So my dad grew up in Kenya, in East Africa, and they had a local shop that they ran about 60 kilometres away. So my grandma and her sister-in-law would alternate. One would stay home to look after the family, the extended family, and then the other would kind of be in the shop to look after the family members running there. So they would kind of alternate. I remember my grandma saying she used to sleep with a machete under her pillow because they literally grew up in the jungle. So it's just wild times. And they came from this incredibly tropical, exotic country that was literally is on the equator to the UK. And it was, you know, my dad remembers it's like knee deep of snow and he's like cycling to work every single morning. As a 17-year-old child, I can't even begin to imagine how tough and how wild that must have been for him.
And obviously you settled in Leicester. How was school for you? Were you particularly studious? Were you very social? What was the vibe?
Oh gosh, I was a bit of a nerd at school. I was studious and it wasn't from this whole like stereotypical view of, you know, Asian parents putting pressure on their children. In fact, my parents were the total opposite. There was never any pressure on them for us to do well.
They just said, stay busy.
Yeah. But I think, I don't know if it was some kind of reverse psychology that worked, but I always just wanted to do my best at school and do every extracurricular activity that was there on the agenda. At university, I became like a brand ambassador and a student ambassador. I was like the face of the library at one point.
How did you become the face of a library? Asking for a friend.
Well, because I was a student ambassador, took loads of, they selected me to do a little photo shoot in the library. And then that became, as soon as you walk in, you'd see like a big poster.
That's great that your brand was literally studious.
Yeah.
And growing up, whether it was with your parents or was at university, did you discuss politics much? Were you party political at all?
I wasn't. My family wasn't party political. My dad always encouraged us to take an interest in politics. And he would even say, like, you know, the milk that you use in your cup of tea, that's also like political. And he really emphasized that, how important it is. So he would like make us watch Newsnight. We were watching Newsnight like 10 p.m. on a school night. we always kind of were encouraged to.
Do you remember seeing any particular politicians on it?
I can't remember. Yeah. That was way before. Yeah. I was like 12 at the time, so.
Always encouraged. And then you went on to study pharmaceutical and cosmetic science at university. So at that point, were you planning a career in science?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to, at that time I was, you know, late teens, just discovering makeup. So I was like, oh, I want to make makeup for a living. And it was great.
Have your own brand.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't that entrepreneurial then, but... And then it just turned out that De Montfort University in Leicester was one of the only universities that offered the course. And I was like, this is great. It means that I can, you know, still be at home and study what I wanted to study. So, yeah.
And when I mentioned this introduction, I could see you slightly shudder. But I will ask you about the beauty pageant. Yeah. It's one of those things that's online. So was it around this time you were a semi-finalist in a beauty pageant? Can you talk us through that experience as someone who's never been invited or suggested to go on one?
Yeah. I was 22 at the time and I can't fully recall the point as to when I made the decision to participate. But I've always kind of been open-minded and I've always kind of taken on every opportunity that's knocked on my door. And it was a similar case for this. I decided to just do it. I've never done it before. And I was quite flattered that somebody thought I should take part. So I did.
At this point, had you already been the face of the library?
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. So the campaign is building.
Yeah. So I did it and then I was awarded the semi-finalist and the finalist was set a month out in advance, the following month, sorry. And I decided to pull out from the competition because I really wanted to go traveling to Cuba to learn Spanish and salsa. So I pulled out after becoming the semi-finalist and to go traveling.
Forgive this basic question because I've watched, you know, the various American pageant docu-series on Netflix. How much glam was there behind the scenes on the stage you were at? Like, you know, did it involve having to wear different outfits or was it just kind of one? What does it involve?
It's not as glamorous as the, what was it called? Is it Fair? What is the brand called?
Of the
feminine, like feminine Miss India. It wasn't like that at all. It's not glamorous. I remember my sister doing my hair and makeup. And I did have an outfit change, but I remember getting changed in the toilet that was backstage.
And I'm linking here to politics, but did it have the Miss World aspect where you had to, you know, also talk about, you know,
there was a bit of Q&A and you talk about world peace and all that.
And you're pro-world peace, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So then obviously you went traveling instead. And how was that?
It was really good. I spent about 5 to 6 weeks out in downtown Havana living with a Spanish family who didn't know a word of English and I didn't know a word of Spanish at the time. So it was really interesting.
How did you communicate? Just dance?
You just learn. I think when you're in that kind of environment where it's literally sink or swim, you just have to learn. So I actually did learn to communicate and I was telling them, you know, I'm going to be home late, so leave the key outside. And, you know, I was actually really proud of myself.
So are you a mean dancer then?
No. I don't know. I shouldn't judge myself, right? Maybe I'll have a career in Strictly in like 50 years' time or something.
What's your best dance? The thing that you train the most, you learnt the most when you...
Never actually professionally learned dancing, to be honest. But obviously being Indian and in our Indian weddings, we always have a lot of dance performances.
Yeah.
And especially
I was just imagining on the trip learning some, But
No. It was, I learned a bit of salsa.
Yeah.
But I actually then quit the salsa lessons to go to a cigar farm.
To work on it or just to smoke?
No, to work on it. Yeah, well, it wasn't to work on
just
it.
Just checking, we've had cigar events here. Like, you're at the Spectator. Some people here are very big on smoking.
Yeah, no, it wasn't not to smoke. It was just volunteering on a cigar farm.
Okay.
I wasn't so much rolling, you know, tobacco leaves. Yeah. It was more kind of horseback riding in the mountains and kind of interacting with the communities that make them, and they were manufacturing the Cohiba cigar, so it was fantastic. Actually, it was really great.
It sounds like a great trip. I'm quite jealous. So moving it back to closer to where we are today, I mean, could talk us through the route that saw you drawn to actually entering politics and kind of how you went from career to politics.
Yeah, so it's a really unique route. So when I'm saying this, I'm not trying to kind of belittle or demean anyone or anything, but my journey was incredibly unique. I went from making lipsticks to making houses to making cocktails to becoming an MP, right?
and you've got to throw the cigar stop in it. Yeah. and on the lipstick one, so you did your course and then did you start working on...
Yes, yeah. So I was incredibly fortunate. I got a job as soon as I graduated, actually, at Boots, at their head office down in Nottingham, and it was in the Midlands, so it was really great. But then thereafter, when I wanted to kind of progress and climb up that ladder a little bit, so I decided to move to London. Here, I then eventually joined AS Watson Group, which are nationally known as Superdrug. So I was there as a quality assurance manager and just managing. They don't have an in-house factory, but you're working with different suppliers and stakeholders. And I then went to join The Body Shop, which is like an iconic British brand. And again, doing the same kind of role, which was product development management. So essentially that's managing the life cycle of a product from proof of concept to product on shelf and interacting with internal and external stakeholders throughout all of that. So I was living in London at that time, and around 2020, when we had the pandemic, my lease in London was up for renewal and we were all working from home, and it was that kind of limbo period. Nobody knew what was happening. So I decided to move back to Leicester for about 6 months and just spend some time with my family. Now, in that six-month period, we had an Indian dancing festival. So I know the common theme that keeps coming back to dancing.
I feel like you're better than you that on.
We had an Indian dancing festival called Navratri. And I was wearing my, you know, Indian outfits, and my drape got stuck on my now husband's shirt. So it was like a real filmy moment. And then 3 months later, we got engaged.
Wow, okay.
So again, that was really quick as well. But then the world started opening up and there was a demand from my employer to get us back in the office 4 days a week. And as a kind of, at this point, I also became married within a year as well. So.
Just getting on with it.
Yeah. So then it became a little bit difficult for me to manage like a new marriage as well as, you know, commuting up and down to London. It's just something that I didn't want to do. So I decided to leave that and join my husband and his brother's business in property and construction. So that's where I spent time.
Slight career change.
So then we have a couple of estate agencies in Leicester where I was kind of getting involved. And my dad has a property business as well. So growing up, I always kind of understood that industry and that field. So I was kind of working with them. And then I told my husband, I don't want to spend every day on a construction site. It's just, I want to do something a little bit different. So then back end of last year, we decided to take on a lease for a late night bar and restaurant in Leicestershire. So that was like my pet project. I wanted to make like a really beautiful slug and lettuce kind of vibe.
Yeah.
So I remember we got the keys for that literally a week before Christmas Eve last year.
Yeah.
And I said to my husband that we need it open for Christmas trade. Like, we can't miss Christmas trade. So we turned it around in 4 days, which was
my God.
Yeah, we had all our friends and family working day and night. I mean, they volunteered.
It was how was the opening?
We opened it. We did make it in time for Christmas trade. And then, now it's running and it's doing really well. So
what's
I was
it called?
Fully engrossed. It's called Asilo. It's in Hinckley.
And it's better than Slug and Lettuce, right?
Yes. I wasn't allowed to go for the full-out pink theme. but no, it's definitely, it's doing well. And my husband and I actually were awarded Young Entrepreneurs of the Year last year by FSB, the Federation of Small Businesses. And this year we were awarded for our businesses Scale Up Entrepreneur of the Year. So, and that was only in around March time this year.
Yeah.
So up until then, I was just like fully engrossed in building our businesses.
No, I'm wondering, as you tell me, I'm like, yeah, how do we then pivot to where we are now? No, go on.
So my husband has always been associated with our local party. And from a business point of view, it's just important to stay connected with what's going on. And as running a couple of small businesses, it was just good to kind of have that connection. Yeah. So I was always his plus one after we got married to these political engagements.
Which are a Conservative Party.
Yeah. And I'll be really honest, I found them really tedious, really boring. I was just there for the food, honestly. But then I remember in February this year, we were driving back from an event and I asked my husband, oh, who is the candidate for Leicester East, which is my home constituency? And he mentioned that they hadn't selected anyone yet. So I said, oh, shall I apply? Ha ha, as a joke, yeah. Like a real flippant off the hand comment. And he didn't laugh back. So I was like, okay. But no, he said, if you want to do it, it is a lifelong commitment. And I'm really grateful. He said, I'll support you. And as from a business point of view, we can afford to let you go and do something good for Leicester. Because he's also from Leicester.
Yeah.
And we both have such a deep love and a deep sense of pride from Leicester. And many people in Leicester feel that same way, but that's not really reflected outside of the city.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking about it for some time. Like, you know, Leicester's, in my opinion, has just not been represented in the best way it could have been. So I took the weekend to think about it and I thought, you know what, nothing to lose, everything to gain. Let's just go for it. So I did. I did my PAB, passed within like a week. And then I applied for Leicester East. But then I had some issues with like the federation and stuff like that. It just didn't happen, really. So then I was like, okay, I let it go. I was like, it's fine. Tried it, didn't work. And then continued kind of working on our businesses. And then I get a call a couple of days after the election was called saying if I'd still like to be selected. And this was literally a week after the election was called. So I was like, okay, that's like 30 days away.
Not much warning, but sure.
But I said, okay, let's do it. And at that point, it was just me, my husband, and a family friend of ours who had known. And it was the three of us. I remember going to his house in the evening. I was like, okay, where do we start? Like, what's the campaign agent? Like, how much does it cost? What should we do? Like, so
Googling.
We just pulled out our phone diaries and tried to reach out to every single person we could. And then within 24 hours, of being selected as a candidate, I had a launch event with my first leaflets printed with over 70 people there. And then I had 30 days.
Did you do it at one of your venues?
No, I didn't.
Just going to say.
No, I didn't. We supported another local business. But I had 30 days to campaign. So at that time, the focus was literally, it was just blinkers. You have your blinkers on and you just go full throttle.
And do you have a sense, because obviously in that election, I think it's fair to say, there was not a sense the Tories were going to do fantastically.
Yeah.
Some were questioning if the polls were really as bad as what MPs felt on the ground.
Yeah. And honestly, I can't say I knew I was going to win because that sounds really conceited.
No. But you had a sense that I had actually, a sense if you weren't looking at the national picture and you were looking at what you were seeing every day, you had a sense
And I just had this deep sense of conviction, like in myself, but that was kind of reinforced because when you knock on 20,000 doors and they're all saying like really lovely things, that gives you a good sense of indication. I think the fact that I was the only gain, like you said, and the youngest, those two things were definitely more of a surprise to me.
And it was quite a unique race because you also had, which potentially helped you a bit, you were up against Labour, they had held the seat, but you had Claudia Webb running, who is the former Labour MP, and then you also had Keith Vaz running for One Leicester. So did it feel quite unique in that sense? I guess unique's a silly question because you don't have anything to compare it to, but I think you know what I mean.
It was really strange, and I was up against like some political heavyweights. You know, the Labour candidate was a deputy mayor to Sadiq Khan. Keith Vaz, you know, for 34 years reigned over Leicester. And he had a deep legacy there. Claudia Webb obviously was a sitting MP, so she would have had all of those kind of constituency connections already. So it felt really strange that I was up against these people, especially from the fact that I literally came out of nowhere. And I was this, you know, people saw me as this like young girl. But I don't know, there was something that I guess they saw something in me that persuaded them to vote this way.
Yeah. And I wondered on that. I mean, obviously there are some factors which mean that, you know, when we say, oh, local win, how can we make that national? There's some things you cannot replicate. But was there anything that you think particularly helped you in your victory? You know, your message? You think it was being a fresh face?
Yeah, it was the campaign and the strategy that we discussed. When I say we, it's just me and my husband in our bedroom. We just decided that it'll be
Your campaign manager, yes?
Yeah.
Your campaign strategist.
Yeah. You know, we just made a conscious decision to be extremely positive, run a completely clean campaign. And we could have gone the other way and just, you know, I mean, it's not that difficult to find dirt on some of the other people I was up against, but we didn't want to be associated with that. It was this fresh face. It was, you know, less than needed an injection of young blood in the city with someone with no political baggage. And I think that really then kind of transpired. And that message was consistent throughout the entire campaign.
And you talk about that positive campaign. Did you think, I suppose, looking at Leicester, in the past, you know, we've seen reports of high tensions in the community between various, you know, communities, ethnic groups. How do you think things are now? And do you think your campaign was unifying in that sense?
I believe so, yes. In the past, you're right, I think in 2022, we had quite a lot of disturbances and tensions between two communities. And at that point, I think someone in the position of an elected member of parliament could have done more or should have done more to unite and bring communities together instead of like picking a side. As a local businesswoman, we've got good community links with everyone. We do business with everyone. We've got partners from all different communities. So I think that really helped. And I was already this kind of, it's not about religion or faith. It's the fact that we are the people of Leicester. And we deserve good representation.
And is faith something that's important to you personally? Or?
It is, but it's also very
personal. Separate from your politics,
I find faith to be a really personal thing. So I am quite religious, but that's just something that is quite sacred to me.
No, I think it's always an interesting one, which is how, you know, lots of politicians have faith. Some see it as key to their politics. Some see it as something quite private.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And just a final one on Leicester, that we could talk about Leicester all day, I'm sure, as a local champion. I think in the past, sometimes, you know, you have seen some commentators say, oh, multiculturalism is not working, and they will say Leicester. Hmm. Do you think multiculturalism works in Leicester?
It does, and it's worked for my entire life, actually. Leicester was once known as the capital city for culture, like in the whole of Europe, which is a really great title. In Leicester, we've got so many different communities, so many different languages, so many different ideas, all coexisting in this real harmony, and they have done for such a long time. And I think there's always this sense, you know, you've got a loud minority and a silent majority is the case, you know, in many places. And I think in the wake of what happened in 2022, the people in the middle are a little bit more protective and a little bit more proud of the multiculturalism that we have in Leicester.
So you've entered Parliament. You don't have that many colleagues. 121 in total of you, so 120 colleagues. Has anything particularly surprised you about Parliament? And how are you finding, you know, you talked earlier about when you didn't want to be commuting in that early job.
Yeah.
How are you finding the balance of MP to, like, in terms of the working week?
Yeah, I think it's all of my colleagues are incredibly supportive and have been there to, you know, lend some advice when I've needed them. I guess the silver lining with only being 120 of us is I don't have that many names to learn. but no, they've been incredibly supportive. I think the biggest surprise for me was actually how hard MPs work. And from someone who wasn't really associated within frontline or even sidelines of this political landscape. You know, I always saw MPs, you know, looking glamorous at all of these events, and I didn't really understand their job. And, you know, you've got to bear in mind, I grew up in Vasland, right? So it was, that was almost reinforced. But now that, since being elected, I'm literally working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's nonstop. And I'm feeling like I always have to be switched on. And the, you know, that saying, like, 24 hours is a long time in Westminster. It really is. It really is. So much can change. So I'm trying to kind of still grasp my head around the how fast paced it actually is. Yeah.
And I suppose, I mean, you talked about the positive campaign you ran, but do you think that there are misconceptions about MPs, or also being a young MP? I mean, I think it's a good thing to have a you know, mix of ages in Parliament, but we've seen in recent Parliaments some of the younger MPs not stand for re-election because they find it quite a stressful job and things.
Yeah, I think having a support network is great, and both you need one, you know, within your party as well as a kind of personal support network. I'm incredibly grateful that my husband and, you know, my family are so supportive in that sense. So I think it's important to have that. I can appreciate why some younger MPs do feel it's really stressful. It is.
Do you go on social media much?
Yes, I do. Yeah, you get the occasional trolls, but majority of the people that I interact with, you know, it is positive. And I think that's really refreshing. And I really hope that that my constituents and those people that I engage with, you know, they set an example for other people in the country that can be a little bit more kinder to politicians.
And just a few final questions. You backed James Cleverly. I mentioned in the introduction. You introduced him.
Yeah.
I think they were clearly keen to show the only gain. The winning team was behind James Cleverly, though, alas, he did not make it to the final two. Yeah. How are you feeling about the direction? I mean, we're speaking before the result of the leadership, but this episode will go after it. But how are you feeling about the general direction of the Tory party?
I'm not sure, actually. I've voted, but I've not disclosed it to... Even my husband doesn't know who I voted for.
And he's... Do you know who he's... Is he a member? Yeah,
he's a member.
Do you know who he's voted for?
I don't need to tell me.
I'm
just not sure if he's actually voted just yet. I should remind him to do it.
Yeah.
But because I've had a lot of people come and ask me, especially within the constituency, and I'm just trying to empower my local membership to just make their own decision, because I also think if they do that, they'll become a little bit more active within the constituency, and that's where I want them to be.
And what are the issues that you want to focus on most in this parliament, things you're passionate about? Because obviously new MP, also you... It's not all about age, but I do think having younger MPs, you naturally have some stuff that perhaps they're more interested in than those who've been around a longer time, or it could be your business background.
Yeah, so at the moment, and this could change as I kind of mature on this political journey, but at the moment, it's definitely more support for small business owners and young people, more opportunities for them. You know, Leicester is one of the UK's most entrepreneurial cities, and not many people know that. And I just think that's just such a shame. And as a small business owner myself, someone who actually has experience in running a business, I know just how difficult it is. You know, you're the last one to get paid. You're working, again, 24 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. You don't have a large team. You know, you're the HR person, you're the accountant, you're the buyer, you're the seller, you're the cleaner in some instances. And it's incredibly tough, and it's quite lonely sometimes as well. So I just think they need to be more recognized nationally and in government as well. And the second thing is more opportunities for young people. And when I sometimes talk to my colleagues about young people, they're talking like 40s. And I'm just like, no, I think we need to do a lot more engagement with, you know, those 16-year-olds, those 18-year-olds, because they deserve to be able to make informed decisions. And they can't do that if they don't even understand what conservative values are. And that's where we are at this stage. A lot of our business associates, they're all in their 30s. They are completely disenfranchised from politics. They shy away from political conversation, and they just say, oh, like, politics is not for me. And I think that's shocking, because these are intelligent young people that are running successful businesses. And if they're feeling this type of way, then what is that telling us about the rest of society and those people who are less fortunate or disadvantaged? And I truly feel that the policies and the governance that takes place today impacts my generation the most. So if anything, we should be the most active.
No, that's interesting. And also because you see those polls where, you know, percentage voting conservative.
Yeah.
And I think maybe at the elections, apologies if I get this slightly wrong, I think it was 65 plus is when you get to. But you think actually the Tory party should be trying to, you know, go as low as, you know, 16 onwards
we
when
should,
it comes to explain to them conservative ideas and so forth. And I suppose trying to shake off what has become a little bit of a toxic brand in the past.
Yeah, and I think having young MPs actually plays a part in that. You can't expect a 16-year-old to be able to relate someone in their 60s, 70s and be engaged when they're talking about conservative values and sentiments. It's just, they're not going to do that. So I think it's important for young people to have good representation in government as well.
And final question, when we ask everyone on this podcast, which is, what is the worst advice you've ever been given? You don't have to have taken it, you can have ignored it, or you could have taken it.
So one of the worst advice I feel I've gotten is to try and blag your way out of stuff, and it wasn't so much like they didn't say the word blag, but it was like, you know, giving me ideas on how to answer questions that I didn't really know the answer to. And as I've kind of been in this role, I've realized that actually that's really bad advice. If I don't know something, it's okay to just say, I don't know, I'll look into it and come back to you. And just kind of be honest and humble with it instead of trying to pretend you have all the answers and set expectations of yourself that you're never going to meet anyway.
Thank you. And thank you for coming on the podcast
today. Thank you.